And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles football craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nuevo Chicago and they were moving it to Rosario. Yeah.
Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affle drives forward. Affle scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Massive Report podcast. My name is Ralph Schudel. Today's date is April 23rd, 2018. And unfortunately, I am not reporting on after a Columbus Crew SC win. But here to break it down with me today, our Massive Report writer, Patrick Murphy. Patrick, how are you today after fulfilling your civic duty?
Well, I didn't fulfill it yet. I still have several more days of whatever they throw at me. Also, I miss Bart.
Hey, that's understandable, and I get it, but we're going to try to carry the show anyway. And then we go to the master of Italian football himself, Mr. Alex Stanek. Alex, how are you this evening?
I'm fine.
You're fine. That's good. That's good. That's better. No insults were thrown my way during that introduction. Do you understand, Patrick? This is how it's done. No witty retort? Okay. Excellent. Moving on. Columbus Crew SC are unfortunately now winless in four, but undefeated in one, unbeaten in one, to say the least, with a 2-2 draw over the New England Revolution. Just about the recipe that we've seen in the last three games, gentlemen. A ton of shots, dominating the game for most of the evening with almost a 61-40 possession advantage. Sure, you know, we'll round down, the numbers at 60.5%, but anyway, dominating the game. It's Berhalter ball. It's at its finest with a lot of crosses, a lot of shots on net. Coming into the game, there were 45 shots for Columbus Crew SC going onto the opposition net, a whopping zero goals for the black and gold, or black and white in the case of Saturday night. Patrick Murphy, let's go ahead and take a journey back into the time machine to Saturday night and break this game down.
Well, I think you kind of explained a good portion of it. This team obviously, you know, bossed a lot of the game in terms of possession. The shots weren't quite as heavily in their favor as we've seen the last few weeks, 16-9. They actually didn't have as many shots on target as New England did, but still a 2-2 draw. An own goal from Andrew Farrell gets the Crew on the board for the first time in a few weeks in the ninth minute. Teal Bunbury quickly equalizes a few minutes later. A nice play, I thought, by him. Well, back to the Crew goal real quick. I thought it was a good play by Milton Valenzuela to set it up and get the ball in the dangerous position that ended up going in off Farrell. But the New England goal, I thought a pretty decent job by Jonathan Mensah to defend him. It was a tight angle. Bunbury got it through his legs and off the post and in. I didn't think there was much Zach Steffen could do there. I thought, as I said, I thought Jonathan did a pretty good job. But then Giassi Zardes scores right before halftime. A real nice goal. Probably his best, I would say, since joining the Crew. A shot from the top of the box. Almost reminded me a little bit of what Justin Merrim used to do, cutting in onto his right foot from the left-hand side. And, you know, Pedro Santos and Federico Higuain each getting assists on that goal. But then again, right afterwards, Crew give up a goal in stoppage time to Christian Pena. And, you know, you go in the second half, go into the second half, come out. You know, I didn't see the intensity that I thought would be there, both from the game, from the start and from the beginning of the second half. You know, the players talked after the game and they thought that there was more intensity than the Chicago game and the DC game. You know, a team that's lost three in a row, I expected them to come out and absolutely dominate the game. And while you said it right, Ralph, they did dominate in terms of possession, you know, it's just, it's not enough. You know, 16 shots is quite a letdown from what we were seeing up in the 20s the last few games. You know, I know New England's probably a little better opponent than Columbus, but as it was pointed out to me in the press box, maybe I have too high of an opinion of this Crew team, you know, that I think that they should handle a team like New England at home, or maybe I'm just not giving New England enough credit. What do you guys think?
The thing is with that, and I'll ask you this, Alex, is, you know, you come in, Crew SC, get the lead, concede the tie just a few moments later, and then just before half, Giassi Zardes puts Crew SC up, and then 3 or 4 plus minutes later, Christian Pena gets Crew SC tied up again. Alex, you were there at the game. You were in the stadium. Take us through those moments as a fan. Does the energy get completely sucked out of the building once you get this lead and it's gone just moments later?
I mean, to a degree, but I also think it was first half action. So, I mean, you go into the half 2-2. I don't think fans were completely deflated or anything like that. I know the mood in the Nordeca was pretty decent. People seemed pretty pumped about everything. So I don't think that it necessarily had a huge impact on that. I'm not sure what the players felt. They left the field pretty deflated. They left the field at the end of the game really deflated. A lot of the players who typically will kind of come over to the Nordeca and clap for us just went straight down the tunnel with their heads down. So, I mean, it was a disappointing result to them, especially, I'm sure we're going to get to this later on, is that kind of that last ditch effort right at the very end of the game that didn't go in. But in terms of the first half, I didn't think they were bad. I didn't think this whole game was that bad. I thought they were a little bit unlucky. I thought that the second goal for New England maybe could have been saved. I thought maybe Stefan could have done a little bit better with it, but maybe that's being a little harsh. It was kind of a point blank shot, so I shouldn't put him in that position. But I think maybe, you know, last season, towards the end of the season, maybe he would have saved that. Overall, I thought it was a better performance than we've seen in recent weeks. I think there's some stuff to build on from that game. I thought Higuain was amazing. I thought he was fantastic. I thought Zardes' goal was really well taken, and it's better on replay. From my angle in the stadium, I thought he just kind of passed it into that bottom corner, but he just kind of curled this ball along the pitch there, and it was one of my favorite goals in the last probably two or three seasons. So that was really great. I thought Harrison Offul had a really kind of awful game. I thought he was really poor throughout significant stretches of action. He had moments, but a lot of the time I think he was out of position. He was not really playing inaccurate crosses. He wasn't really contributing much. So that's a concern. And then they were doubling up on Valenzuela because he's, you know, such a dangerous guy. And so everything was kind of going through Harrison, who was not having a great performance. So I thought that was a problem. But overall, I think there's a lot of kind of progress being made. But still, like Patrick said, not the kind of performances that we're used to seeing from earlier on in the season. And hopefully we can get back into form and get back out there.
Now I have a question for you, Alex. And I've noticed a lot during the course of the game, particularly on Saturday evening, Harrison was kind of just letting any shot go if he was at the top of the box or the top of the 18. If you're Greg Berhalter, what position do you prefer Harrison? More of a crosser, or would you like him to kind of go in the box a la the NYCFC game for the fourth goal there?
I mean, if he's playing in accurate crosses, I think our system works well where he's playing in crosses, especially if they're kind of those on-the-ground crosses. I don't think Zardes is kind of someone who's going to take a ball out of the air and head it into the back of the net as much as a guy like, you know, Kai Kamara would have. I think Ola Kamara, it was kind of a similar story where we would play these chipped balls in and the goalkeeper would either grab it or punch it out, or a defender would head it out to the top of the 18, something like that. So I don't think Zardes is going to be that kind of player who's going to, you know, be a target man. I don't think Adam John's going to do that either for the most part. So I would prefer that we don't do those, but as long as it's an accurate cross across the box, I think that's a great option for us. I think we've been fairly productive the last two or three seasons playing that sort of a style, and I think that we can do that again. But positioning needs to be better, and the accuracy needs to be better. And I think sometimes I thought Harrison was just kind of throwing something in there when maybe he could have held up the ball, passed it back to the top of the 18, tried to find a better solution to the problem than just kind of whipping something in and hoping.
So a player, guys, that I seem to take a nice notice of his first half performance until he was subbed off later on in the game was Nico Hansen, cracking the starting lineup for the first time in 2018, I do believe. Guys, how do we feel? I know personally from my perspective on the field, he seemed like he was very good, very with it. Didn't seem like he missed the beat, and frankly, I think was a little bit more of an asset than Christian Martinez. Albeit, then when Martinez came into the game, I felt like he had something to offer to the team, particularly with how physical and how kind of interesting the game got as the game progressed there, and Crew SC were really chasing that final goal in the last few moments. Patrick, did you have a chance maybe to talk to Nico after the game and see what his thoughts were about getting back in the lineup?
No, Nico was MIA in the locker room after the game. I don't know if he was still showering before we left or if he was out of there before we got in there. But yeah, I did. I agree with you. I thought he was one of the better players on the field for the period of time he was on there. They got in him a guy that, you know, can really run at people, take guys on 1v1, and create some dangerous things. Now, I do think that, you know, he's still a young player. He's still very much developing. So you saw on the one play where he, you know, beats a guy, gets into the box, but then doesn't get the shot off. Things like that are going to happen. And, you know, he reminds me a lot of a young but further along Justin Merrim in the way he can do things. You know, I think he really wants to boss the game. And I like that because I don't think they have too many guys who are willing to do that. So, you know, on a day when, you know, I agree with Alex, Higuain I thought was really good. You know, I thought the defense could have been better. You know, I thought Nico Hansen was another bright spot.
The thing that I thought was interesting about Hansen was there were a couple plays. I think this happened at least twice. I know it happened once that I vividly remember because I was kind of a little bit shocked by it. Nico would kind of make a move. He would get around a player and then kind of try to play the ball to somebody, and it wouldn't find another player. It would get cut out. And Higuain screamed at him, like just really let him have it, kind of made hand gestures saying, like, no, play it like this, and was absolutely screaming at the top of his lungs at him. I have not seen Higuain get that mad at a player in a while. So I think that he was definitely, from an individual performance perspective, he was fantastic. I thought he did really well. He was energetic. He was really good 1v1. He really kind of stretched the defense a little bit. But in terms of his chemistry with the other players, he still doesn't have that. And that'll only come with time. I mean, he's going to need to get more minutes in training. He's going to need to get more minutes in game time situations in order to kind of build that rapport with those players. But Higuain was definitely not thrilled with his performance. And in all the games I've seen with Martinez, I don't think I've seen him really let Martinez have it to the same degree. I mean, he's definitely kind of made hand gestures and said, hey, next time play the ball like this. But it was interesting to me to see Higuain really yell and scream at him. And he did it at least twice.
I have a question just in general about the offense. And I just want to get what you guys think. You know, we've gone through three games here. You know, the Crew scored two goals technically, but only put one of them in the net themselves. Obviously, they're creating a lot of chances, and we've talked about this in previous seasons, but is this offense good enough for you right now? Is there, you know, I'm talking specifically the starting guys, because I know we think that they need depth and they need to add somebody to bring that added depth and give them another option off the bench. But, you know, Giassi Zardes obviously has five goals. I think he's been good for the most part. But, you know, are they getting enough from that attacking front four, and maybe even throw Arthur in there? You know, and I think you can also include set pieces in this conversation. Are they getting enough to your liking at this point over this stretch where things haven't gone as well?
So, you know, Pat, I think you hit a great point there about the depth issue, and I'll touch on that here in a second. But ideally, if I'm Greg Berhalter, this is the team that I'm going to march out, because I really like it, you know, especially if you look at it. And I'll reset the lineup here for folks that may not have been at the game. So you had Zach Steffen at the back, Harrison Offal on the right side, Jonathan Mensah, Josh Williams in the center of the park, Milton Valenzuela on the left side. Then you had Arturo Trapp in the defensive midfield, Santos, Higuain, Hansen, and Zardes. I really liked how the front four were interacting with one another. And like Alex said, Higuain was really driving the engine. And I think, you know, it's funny. This guy's like a fine wine. He keeps getting better with age. And there are games that he's really on, and then there are games where he just kind of disappears. And it appears, and it's been the motto for several years now, so Higuain goes, so does the rest of Columbus Crew SC. And I really like what you said there, Murph, about Nico Hansen kind of taking the more younger slash advanced role of Nico Hansen playing that Justin Miram role. And I really liked Christian Martinez coming off the bench, because I think right now, you know, he's going to be more of that super sub, that spark plug, because I noticed an uptick in the game. I was standing in the south side of the stadium there towards the party on the plaza area or whatever it is. And just to see him kind of streak down the left-hand side, he was giving Farrell and Anibaba fits on the left-hand side. And it was, you know, you could feel the kind of tone of the match changing a little bit and thinking, oh, you know, they might pop one. They might get that go-ahead going. It may happen. But I think, you know, depth striker-wise, and I hate to go after him because he's such a nice guy, but Adam John is not a second striker. And, I mean, some of these substitution patterns that Greg did, you know, I know I've been off the show for a couple weeks, but, you know, if you look back at Chicago and you look back at a couple of these other games with the substitution patterns, it's just, I don't understand them, because it's just, it's very intriguing to me. Like, taking Pedro Santos off for Adam John in the 86th minute, like, you still need somebody to score. You need somebody to get those crosses in, and using only two of your three substitutions allotted, too. I mean, I would like to see him go to the depth, use his full bench, and try to make substitutions that make sense.
Well, so I one other thing. I mean, John is kind of something we've touched on a lot. And I do still think that's a need, is a second option off the bench at striker. But I also think this team is really missing Justin Miram right now. Jossie Zardes is a very good MLS level striker. I think he's on par with Ola Kamara. I actually think Ola Kamara and Jossie Zardes are very similar players in a lot of ways. But Justin Miram scored 13 goals for us last season. You know, he scored 13 goals in 34 games. They are missing that. They are missing that threat, and it impacts the way that people cover the other players on the field. It creates less space for Pedro Santos. It creates less space for Jossie Zardes. And they need some sort of a threat there on the left wing other than one of the young guys, I think. And I love Christian Martinez. I'm a huge fan of him. I think he's got a bright future with this team. I think he's going to be someone who can really develop over the next few years into a really solid player. I think Nico Hansen's a very similar situation. But I mean, you look at Justin Miram when he was a young player, and he was an incredibly frustrating player. You know, he did very little until he was in his late 20s. That's just the way things go sometimes. And I don't think that Nico or Christian are necessarily the answer there if we're going to be competing for trophies this season. So I think that's something they need to look at, try to spend that money a little bit, bring in somebody who can really stretch the defense a little bit, provide threats on both sides of the striker. Not let them kind of just deal with things. Because I feel like right now, basically what they're doing is they're rotating Pedro Santos and Christian Martinez, hoping that one of them will lose their man, and hoping that they'll have an opening. And sometimes that happens. I mean, I think it was this game where Christian Martinez had like a really great breakaway. He was basically one-on-one with the keeper, played it across the face of goal, and it didn't go. They couldn't finish it on the far end. I think Zardes might have missed it on that far end. But I still think they need an option there. Now, maybe that is Grella. I'm sure that's probably what Berhalter's thinking. He wants to see Grella before he kind of splashes out cash on somebody. But, you know, I would like to see an option brought in. You've got the money. Either sign a very expensive striker or sign a moderately expensive striker and a moderately expensive left winger, but spend the money. You know, you sold one of the top players on the team and you should replace them. You shouldn't wait until you're three-fourths of the way or halfway through the season to do that. So I hope they're at least looking at options, but we'll have to wait and see.
Well, I think one of the issues, and you say, you know, spend part of the money on a striker, spend part of the money on a winger. I think you've got the issue there that, you know, when you go out to European clubs, to really anywhere, I feel like you're spending more than what you're getting back in American value, you know, value. Like what you got for Justin, I'm not sure that there's enough there, even Justin Anola, to really bring in two quality pieces. I mean, you could bring in two guys that maybe are fringe 18 guys and things like that, but, you know, I think the idea is that they want to get, you know, somebody in who can make a difference at one of those positions. And I do think you're right. I do think Mike Grella is somebody they're waiting to see once he's with the first team and whatnot, you know, how he impacts things. You know, I was able to go out to the scrimmage on Sunday and watch him and Gaston play with the reserves against Louisville. And, you know, I thought Mike looked really good. You know, I think he scored a goal in that game, just kind of a fairly easy finish, but right place, right time off of a cross from Christian. And, you know, you could tell that he's not 100% back fitness-wise and whatnot, but you will have to think that that's going to come. You know, he went 1v1 against one of the Louisville fullbacks, beat the guy, you know, sprinting past him. This is a 31-year-old, I believe, guy taking on a college kid who, you know, has obviously been in training and whatnot, and Grell is just getting back. So it was good to see that kind of burst from him. And, you know, I think he's going to be, as we mentioned last week or 2 weeks ago, whichever it was, I think he's going to be a pretty good option for this team. I think he very much fits into what Berhalter and the club want to do going forward. And, you know, I think he gives them something different, you know, a older, more mature version of someone like Nico Hansen. And while we're on the topic, I think, you know, Gaston Saro looked fine. He played 45 minutes, didn't have to do much, got involved in like one, you know, kind of tackle clearance at the top of the box, had to like scramble over to cover for Lalas, who had to slide out wide and, you know, make a big tackle, which was good to see him, you know, really challenge for something. But other than that, he was just kind of passing the ball around at the back and whatnot, didn't have to do a ton. So it was kind of harder to evaluate where he was, but really good to see both of those guys back, you know, and just out there playing. I mean, for Mike, it's been almost a year. It'll be a year in June since he was playing, and you know, it's been over a year since he was playing regularly. Gaston, obviously, we all know, it's been since early October of 2016. So to get those guys back is good. Both of them had complications with their knee injuries. As someone who's dealt with knee injuries, those things are no fun. So I'm glad to see both of them back and healthy, and both really good guys too. I hope fans get a chance to kind of get to know Mike a little bit while he's here, because he's an awesome guy and really likes to just chat about soccer. I mean, he talks a lot to us about stuff. So hopefully fans get to meet him too, and as well as get to watch him play some this year.
Yeah, that was a really cool experience I had coming back from doing the Massive Report postgame show on Saturday. I actually ended up going back to the photo workroom about the same time that Gaston and Mike were being led into the locker room. And, you know, I asked the guys, you know, clearly off the record, and I said, hey, guys, you know, are you excited about getting back out there Sunday? And, you know, Grella's face was a mile wide. You know, he was ready. He said, yeah, man, I'm ready. And Gaston, too. You could tell that it was the end of a long journey for them, and, you know, that there's some degree of redemption that was going to happen for them on Sunday. So I'm really glad that those guys were ready to go out and kind of do their thing. So it was really, really cool to see those guys. I, you know, speaking from my perspective and the times I've got to talk to them, you know, fans, if you get a chance to talk to at least Gaston and my brief exchange with Mr. Grella, it's worth it. You know, these guys are truly great athletes, great people, and, you know, you'd love to have them on their squad. So as we shift as we shift to some things. I'm sorry, guys. The peanut gallery's throwing me off my game this evening.
Sorry.
So shifting gears
when,
now. Let's talk.
When people say off the record, they don't mean talk about it on your podcast.
I didn't say it specifically. I didn't say what we talked about. We could have talked about his dog or something like that.
Well, that's not any sort of record that anyone cares about.
Well, you know, maybe his dog, his name is Steve, and he loves his golden retriever very much, and that's why he dyed his hair blonde or something like that. I don't know.
I can confirm none of that is true.
Okay. fake news. Anyway, so moving on to Save the Crew. Lots of stuff, legal stuff. It's making my head spin right now. But let's keep it simple initially and ease into it before we just rip the Band-Aid off. On Saturday morning, a talented group of artists and people got up really early in the morning, 6 a.m. in fact, by some accounts as I've talked to them. And you may notice at the corner of Hudson and High Street on the way going back into Clintonville, there's a pretty nifty, swanky mural there saying respect your roots. And we're going to have a picture up on this. Me and Sam actually are getting ready to go out and do a photo shoot this weekend. So hopefully we're going to have a little something here on MassiveReport.com to show it to you. But if you guys go all over social media and check it out, it's really, really neat. Gentlemen, did you guys get a chance to take a look at that mural? It's pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, it's a cool mural, but nobody cares about the mural. Let's just get to the fun stuff.
Wow, you are going to get so much crap on social media for that. Guys, you can tweet him at Alex Stanek, and he'll answer all of your calls.
I just wonder if the listeners want us to describe what the mural looks like over the podcast or comment on the artistic work that was done.
So if you're standing outside right now, it's a brisk, probably 60 degrees outside. Imagine the wind hitting your face. And you're looking at this beautiful building.
Alex, go ahead and talk about Save the Crew.
Okay, go ahead, Alex.
So there's been a lot of stuff that's happened with the legal battle. MLS was waiting to file their motion to dismiss that everyone knew was coming. And people thought, oh, maybe it'll be in the morning or maybe it'll be in the afternoon, but it should be before 5 p.m. So we'll get it by then. At the latest, 11:59 p.m., we'll get it so they can submit it by the deadline. And a lot of us ended up staying up way later than we should have, waiting for a document that never showed up because they submitted it after 5 p.m. and it was not published on the website until well after. And so they published this document saying, please throw out this lawsuit, because the initial lawsuit by the city and by the state basically said that Precourt owned the Crew, and Precourt, in fact, does not own the Crew. He owns 1/23 of Major League Soccer. That was
I'm sorry. Is there anything to confirm this that you might have on text anywhere in the world?
Yeah. So there were a lot of kind of funny bits about this. People were digging up old tweets from Don Garber calling him the owner. People were digging up the fact that Anthony Precourt's literal Twitter profile called himself the owner of Crew SC, which he then changed the next morning to say investor operator. And then everyone was kind of screenshotting the two next to each other saying, look at how ridiculous the situation is. This is a total farce. And in a lot of ways it kind of is. And so then earlier today you had the city releasing a statement basically saying that this is a bunch of nonsense and that they can't really prove any of this without releasing the documents. There have been a lot of comments from people saying that maybe MLS shot themselves in the foot a little bit with some of their arguments because it's going to lead to discovery because then a court is going to say, well, if you're claiming X, Y, Z, then we need to see the LLC document from Major League Soccer. We need to see the documents from Major League Soccer's founding so that we can look at the corporate structure of the league itself. These are very closely guarded secrets. These are things that Major League Soccer is not wanting to let anyone see, especially not people who might not be their best friends right now. But at the same time, there's something else that's very, very interesting. And that is that Columbus Dispatch, Andrew Erickson, I believe it was, published an article saying that Major League Soccer has met with potential investors in Columbus and that they had Alex Fisher on the record saying that these meetings happened. And beyond that, they had the deputy commissioner of Major League Soccer on the record, Mark Abbott, who said that the meetings were productive. And this is someone who is a very powerful individual within Major League Soccer. And the thing that was very interesting to me was that Mark Abbott went on the record a day after the Major League Soccer Board of Governors met. So they all kind of gathered around at the conference table somewhere and had a little meeting and discussed a bunch of stuff. And then the next day, Major League Soccer goes on the record and says, we're meeting with potential investors in Columbus and that these meetings are productive. So really, really interesting things on that front as well. Hopefully those will lead to us saving the crew. But we'll have to wait and see how that all plays out. Yeah, it's been one of the most interesting weeks, I think, of this whole saga. And definitely a lot of positive things happening in Columbus. There's some more stuff kind of happening in Austin that is interesting as well, with the McCalla site, some people wanting that site to be used for different things. So there's a lot of kind of interesting, kind of quiet things going on that hopefully we'll have results soon. But the court case continues to kind of move, and we'll have to see how that all goes. But it's looking better and better, I think it's safe to say.
I think that it's important to note that, and Colin, who was on with us last week, pointed this out in his article, his rather lengthy article, but if you're interested in kind of everything that's gone on up until, I think he published it on Friday, it's a good read, a very good read, but take about 30 minutes out of your day to do it, because it's a long one. But I think it's important to note that in a case like this, things like saying Anthony Precourt isn't the owner, which I guess is technically true, is something that happens, you know, not that specific example, but basically you're trying to throw, I think the way Colin put it similarly was that you're trying to throw everything at the wall here and hoping something sticks. And so you even go as silly sometimes as you know, saying Anthony Precourt isn't the owner when clearly you've stated on multiple other occasions that he is. I don't think that if they are at all successful with this, that will be the point that changes things. You know, I just think that they're trying to get everything kind of out there at once, and, you know, hope that something works. As for the stuff with Mark Abbott, what I thought was most interesting about that was, I believe a day or so before Commissioner Don Garber was asked at an event in New York about Save the Crew stuff, and he said that there was no, you know, that they were still lacking support in Columbus and that there weren't any formal offers. I'm paraphrasing here, so, you know, but, and so then to come, you know, it was kind of a response to that. It seemed to me that they were, you know, saying, whoa, 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 we definitely have had conversations. And, you know, then Mark Abbott has to kind of clarify and say, you know, these conversations have happened and they've been productive and whatnot. I think the big question here, and while I agree with Alex, I think this is all very productive. You know, my question still remains, is this the league doing this just to kind of appease the Modell law if and when that, you know, takes effect, you know, saying, hey, we met with people. So we've covered that, and I know there's some debate about whether they have to, you know, just talk to potential owners or actually have to, you know, seriously consider offers. But, you know, I just wonder if that's why they're doing this. I hope for all of our sakes that, you know, these conversations really are going as well as we're led to believe, and that, you know, we will see some promise here. But yeah, it was interesting timing, because I think, you know, coming off of Garber's comments, to then clarify like this, at least I think was good on the league for being like, wait, sorry, that's not true. Here's what's really been going on.
Well, and if you wear the tinfoil hat again, I think the fact that this came literally the day after the BOG meeting for Major League Soccer is really interesting. What they were discussing was all aspects of the league, including expansion, and so I'm sure that Austin and Columbus came up. The situation in Austin has not really improved. The only site they're looking at is McCalla Place. When you look at what happened in Cincinnati, you had two very good sites, Newport and Oakley, that were basically shot down by the league because they were not ideal. McCalla Place is the farthest thing from ideal. I mean, you compare the Newport site that FC Cincinnati were looking at, or the Oakley site that FC Cincinnati were looking at and you put that against McCalla Place, it's night and day. I mean, McCalla Place is a site that might be good for the league 10 years from now, but all of the, you know, the luster and shine of the franchise is going to be worn off 10 years from now. They need something that's going to be a hit now, especially in a city that really hasn't embraced soccer to the degree of a Cincinnati or a Sacramento or a Phoenix or a Nashville. So I think they need a bigger win than McCalla, and they might not even get McCalla. I mean, that's the crazy thing with Austin. So the fact that all of this is happening, there's progress being made in Columbus by all accounts. How much progress is kind of still to be determined. But another thing that just happened today was that Sports Illustrated, Brian Strauss, and Grant Wall published their ambition rankings. And Columbus Crew finished dead last. They finished dead last, and they say in this thing. Let me just read this. I just want to read it in its entirety, honestly, because I think it's worth noting.
So you're saying the ambition was not respected?
Apparently not by Grant Wall and Brian Strauss, two of the you know top writers in American soccer. I say Anthony Precourt didn't have the means, skill, or commitment to make the Crew successful in Columbus, or he willfully sandbagged the club in order to justify his desired exit. For the purposes of this ranking, it doesn't matter. Both are a long, long way from ambitious. Along with the players and coach Greg Berhalter, who have been efficient and successful with limited resources, the fans who have railed to save their team have demonstrated a lot more ambition than those in charge. They deserve better. But for Crew ownership, abandoning ship means sinking, or means you sink to the bottom. So, pretty strong words from two of the top writers. I have to think that Major League Soccer looks at a situation like this and says, you know what? Anthony Precourt is poison at this point. You know, his name is toxic. His name is mud. You move him to Austin and all this stuff is going to follow him. And, you know, journalists are going to dog him the entire way. They're going to dog him about this for years. This is not something that's just going to get swept under the rug and people are going to move on. There are going to be questions and inquiries and you know, swipes made about this for years and maybe decades into the future. And I'm not sure that's something that Major League Soccer wants. I haven't seen a single owner come out enthusiastically in favor of moving the team to Austin. I haven't seen that a single time. And you've seen a lot of owners kind of make tepid remarks. You've seen some owners who've made remarks that could have been interpreted as swipes at Anthony Precourt. You know, we talked about the remarks that Arthur Blank made a few weeks ago. In all of this with the Board of Governors meeting, Mark Abbott's comments, the kind of optimism that you've seen on social media from some of the Save the Crew folks, I think things are going well. Keep your fingers crossed. But yeah, definitely been an interesting week.
Now, Alex, just for clarification for the folks out there, can you tell me what Arthur Blank's role is with Atlanta United?
So Arthur Blank is the owner of Atlanta United, according to Atlanta United's website. He is the owner of Atlanta United.
Not the investor operator, you're sure?
According to his website, it says he's the owner, yes. According to Atlanta United's official MLS website, with the official MLS template that they use for all their sites, he is listed as the owner of Atlanta United.
Well, that's pretty funny how cool.
Funny how he must have got a better deal than Precourt did or something. I mean, I don't know how those two things can work at the same time, but maybe they don't. Who knows?
Well,
they're all owners. Maybe they're all investor operators.
Maybe it's one giant conspiracy. But, you know, guys, the one thing that we haven't touched on, too, and Alex, brilliant points, gentlemen, by the way, just from kind of observing and listening to everything here that we've discussed so far about McCalla and Austin. But let's not forget that there is a USL team that is ready to start play in 2019 in Austin, Texas. So, you know, and this guy's out there struggling and trying to fight from behind this shadow of this giant looming, you know, limbo that is MLS to ATX right now. And this guy doesn't know if he's going to get, you know, collapsed on or if this is just the market is suddenly going to be oversaturated, you know. So it's, you know, if I'm Mr. Epstein of the USL franchise, what do I do?
Well, I also think it's worth noting to people that Epstein is a ridiculously well-connected individual in Austin. He is someone who has, you know, spent his life there. You know, he's a local owner, if you will, right? And he runs the COTA facility down there, the racetrack, and is a very, very wealthy individual who's got a lot of political connections. And he said flat out months ago, he doesn't think that MLS to Austin is going to happen. And so he went full steam ahead with his plans. He's still going full steam ahead. I'm not sure how that will impact kind of the political process in Austin, but I think that's something to consider as well. You know, if you're going to have this friend of yours in a lot of cases investing a lot of money in this venture, are you going to put city money in place to basically undercut his investment? Maybe not. I don't know. But they've had a couple USL teams not do well there. And so I wonder if that gives city officials a little bit of pause as well. Are we really willing to invest not only a parcel of land that's currently set aside for public housing and for combat gentrification, but also put aside money that that Anthony Precourt wants for kind of upgrades to the surrounding area, you know, road upgrades, sewage upgrades, power upgrades, things of that nature? Are we really willing to spend that money to create something that in a lot of ways is already there? You know, you're going to have a professional soccer team in Austin, Texas next year, no matter what. Do we need to? I don't know. So it's all very interesting what's happening there. And Epstein's confidence that it's not happening is something that I think Crew fans should consider as well, because he knows more about what's going on in Austin than any of us do.
And that's a great point. And a lot of stuff, honestly, that makes my head hurt. But holy Toledo, guys. I know it's tough, but just hold on. Keep the faith. It seems like things, you know, admittedly, I will say that I was a little bit pessimistic about everything. But, I mean, you know, you look at everything and how it's progressing, and it doesn't seem like it's falling the way that Anthony Precourt would like it to. So, who knows? There's a lot of legal battles. This isn't going to be won overnight necessarily. But let's take a look here now, guys. Let's shift over to Twitter and see if we have any questions. No questions came in on Facebook, Mr. Murphy. Do we have anything on Twitter this evening, sir?
Bam. Yes, there were answers. Or there were questions on Twitter.
They're answering our questions already?
No, they Man, want answers from us.
You guys are a rambunctious bunch, let me tell you what. There, let's get.
I saw at least one. I thought I saw a couple. This was while I was at jury duty, so you know.
Oh, wow.
I see one.
Fulfilling your civic duty. Excellent, excellent. Let's see here.
Not fulfilling, still in the process.
Well, you get to eat sandwiches and have a good time, so don't worry about that.
They don't feed us. I'm not sure what you're talking about. And okay. I'm glad you're filling this with this talk.
I see a question. You just want me to read it?
Yes, go for it. Let's roll.
Okay, so this is a question from Nordekian, who asks, with Grella nearly being healthy, does he push into the starting lineup? And if so, who moves to the bench?
I think it's going to be a while before you see Mike in the starting lineup. I do think you might start to see him pop up in the 18 in the next month or so. You know, but like Andrew and I were talking after the scrimmage, Andrew Erickson and I were talking after the scrimmage the other day, and we were saying that, you know, maybe by June, you know, these guys, I mean, you know, a scrimmage against Louisville and he plays 60 minutes. And, you know, said he got a little bit tired towards the end of the first half. You could tell that things still weren't quite there when it came to, you know, his game and just how quickly things were coming. And that's in a scrimmage against a college team. So, you know, I think you start to see Mike make some bench action coming off the bench maybe before he pushes into the starting lineup. Gaston, I think, is a little bit further away. Not that the question asked about Gaston, but just for an update. But when he is fit, I could see him certainly fitting into the starting lineup. I think it will depend on, you know, who else is playing well at that point in time. I don't think you take Pedro out. I think he's proven to be a pretty surefire starter. So then, you know, the battle's going to kind of be between Mike, Nico, and Christian, you know, assuming that no additions are made before then. And, you know, I think then you just kind of go with the best man. You know, I think they each give you something a little bit different. So you'll have some options there.
Very nice. Very nice. I'll have a question here from Shudell_Ralph. Gentlemen, what did you think of the Adidas parlay jerseys on Saturday evening?
I don't like that guy, so I don't answer his question.
Nah, he's terrible.
I'm just kidding. I actually really liked, I'm not a big fan of white jerseys typically, but I thought those were nice. They just confused me. Every time I looked up, I was thinking that New England's dark blue was the Crew's black, and I was very confused for like the whole first half.
I think it's a testament to the hard work that was done on that crest that it looks great basically no matter what colors you put it on. I think that it's a really great shirt, and I know that they're going to be auctioning off a bunch of them for the Crew SC Foundation, and I kind of want to bid on them, but I'm not sure if that money is just going to get moved with the team when, if the team moves, which is looking like it's not going to happen, but you never know. I don't want to be funding some soccer field in Austin, Texas. So I probably won't be participating in that auction, but if they do this again next year, I would totally be down for a 2019 white Crew shirt. So that would be really great. Alex Fisher, if you're listening to this, is your first shirt design, maybe a white away kit. I don't know. That could be pretty cool. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I liked it. You know, it was a cool kit. You know, speaking from a photographer's standpoint, it was a lot easier to photograph and looks a lot sharper, particularly because I know our cameras occasionally to pick up the seat backs depending on where we're at in the stadium, so it kind of throws things out of focus. But you know, from a technical standpoint, it was really nice to photograph, and it looked really sharp too. But one thing I pointed out to Sam on Saturday, and I don't know if you guys saw it, Pat, mainly because you're kind of high up, and you know, Alex, you got a lot of other things to worry about. But one of the things that as the game progressed and the players started to sweat, the jersey started turning a cream color, which was really interesting, and I kind of started thinking about that upcycled plastic a little bit. But it was a neat thing. I liked it, and you know, we've seen that in Europe, I think, with Bayern Munich, and I'm trying to think of the Real Madrid had one of those kits too, right, guys? Do we remember?
Yeah, they had one for a whole season of recycled material. I liked it for a one-off, you know, maybe a couple times or something. But you know, my feeling's always been with the Crew for a long time that wear yellow until you are in a game where you can't wear yellow anymore, and then wear black.
The DC United Crew SC games are the best, though. That's just two classic teams.
Yeah, when they put them in their right colors.
When they put them in their right colors, not that weird white. That
it's like when they play United. Chicago and the Crew wear black and the Fire wear white, and it's like, why are you doing this?
Why are you torturing me like this?
When you said that didn't Real Madrid have a shirt like that, I thought you meant a white shirt.
A white shirt.
And I got super confused. I was like, Ralph, you idiot.
Come on, Alex. I'm silly, but not that silly.
Speaking of Real Madrid.
Off of this thing. I would have quit. I would have been like, I'm done with the podcast. Goodbye.
Speaking of Real Madrid, the San Jose Earthquakes.
Yeah, let's pivot on, guys. Next week, San Jose Earthquakes coming to town.
Great transition, Mafre
Stadium. That is a great transition. That's why you get paid the big bucks. And so, as we said, guys, the natural, locationally selected Heineken Rivalry Week.
Is that this week?
I don't know. I'm just saying it. I'm just making fun of it because everybody has fun with that. But the Rivalry Week rival, say that three times fast, San Jose Earthquakes come to Mafre Stadium. I said clash too. Oh my god. It is superhero night at Columbus Crew SC, the Tiny Demon Fortress. And kind of an interesting thing going on is they were having your favorite superhero name for your favorite Crew player. Anybody want to start this segment off with their favorite superhero name? Anybody?
So I actually submitted to the contest. I put in my favorite Crew superhero was Federico Higuain El Genio, and his superpower was that he could see the play before it happens, right? I thought it was good. It got 2 likes on Facebook, you guys, too.
Two?
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah.
That's more than an article Ralph writes for Massive Report.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Ralph gets 3 likes.
Yeah. Well, we were having an interesting discussion about that today, but I'll save that for off the air, off the record, too, because I know what that means. So anyway, oh, my God, this is off the rails.
I'm not going to partake in this because I've already heard some of the names. So
excellent. Well, the San Jose Earthquakes come into town, and By golly, ladies and gentlemen, there are six games played for the Earthquakes. They are 1-3-2 with 11 goals scored, 13 conceded. And Chris Wondolowski, I still haven't forgiven you for the World Cup, so you're welcome. Lots of interesting things to kind of take into it. Storylines, Crew SC still have not gotten a game in four. Is this the one where we turn it around? Gentlemen, I start with you, Alex Stanek. Tell me your thoughts.
Okay, so first of all, I want to touch on Wondolowski because I think this is something somewhat interesting. I am no longer mad at him for that goal. I wasn't super mad at him to begin with, but missing the World Cup is way worse than missing a goal in the World Cup. So he's off my bad list.
I actually agree with that now. I haven't thought of it that way.
Because I hate basically everyone who was in the qualification round, like all those kind of older guys who were, you know, doing that stuff. I hate Tim Howard more than I hate Wondolowski at this point, because at least he didn't ruin the World Cup for me that's coming up, you know. So stuff like that, I don't have any sort of feelings towards Wando, other than that he seems like a nice enough guy. I don't think he's going to win this next game. I hope not. You just want my prediction right now, Ralph? You just want me to do it?
No, that's not how we do things here.
I like that we're talking about the guy with one goal and one assist in six games played for San Jose.
Instead He's an icon, man.
The guys that are actually I guess the highest score on their team has two goals, so never mind. No, nobody can score.
Stay tuned to the massive reports or the massive scouting report later this week, which will get four likes and will be tops of the massive report hit page this week. So, as Murph said... So, anyway, Patrick, since you're so jonesing to, you know, give us your impression of everything, go ahead and lay it on me, bud.
I actually haven't seen San Jose play this year, and watching other games.
Look like you're missing much.
Strangely, exactly. You know, I'm just looking at, you know, I know that they have not done well. I think they're at the bottom of the West when I looked earlier. But it's just a team that, you know, like you said, Ralph, I think 11 goals scored, 13 against. It's not happening for them. I think that, you know, we talked about last week as a game when I thought they should handle business. If they don't handle business in this game, I'm going to be very disappointed, because this is a team coming into your place. Now you're four games without a win after going four unbeaten to start the year. You know, I don't know what else it would take to get them to come out and, you know, put a hurting on a team, you know, and kind of make it count, and you get the fans back into the game, come out early, maybe grab a goal that you actually score early in the game, get a second goal in the first half, you know, just take control of a game and look like a team that, you know, I've had a couple players bring up, or I did during that four-game run, the word supporter shield. And if you're going to toss that out there, I think you need to back it up. And, you know, while I don't think a four games without a win slide means that you can't do that in this league, because I think teams go through that, I think when a team like San Jose, who is struggling, comes into your house, you need to take advantage of it. And, you know, I think that needs to happen Saturday, or we really need to start asking some questions, even though the performances haven't been that bad.
So let me ask you guys this real quick. For, you know, Alex, obviously you have a very unique perspective with this, Patrick, too, and I think you might have touched on it. But do Crew SC have to put a beating down on San Jose before you start feeling okay? Do they have to come out looking like world beaters on Saturday evening?
I don't know if they have to. I mean, it's a long season, and they certainly have, you know, a lot of time to figure things out. And we've seen this team struggle through the first half of the season and, you know, turn it on. So it's not like I'm worried about, you know, this team turning into 2016. But I do think that, you know, this is a team that I thought coming into the season was going to be really good. And thus far they've been good for four games and mediocre for four games. So in terms of results, you know, I think Eric Andrew had a quote from Jonathan that was like, you know, we can keep saying that we're playing well and whatnot, but if we're not getting results, you know, does that really matter? And, you know, it was kind of refreshing when I read that in Andrew's piece, because I think, you know, a lot of the other guys, regardless of what they think, are, you know, we're playing well, we've gotten results early, you know, it's a long season type of thing. And to hear somebody actually say, hey, we need to start winning these games we think we should win, instead of just saying we think we should win them, was nice to hear.
Alex, what do you think?
Huh? Oh, you want me to comment?
There it is. There it is. This show is running too efficient.
So my comment was actually on something completely different, which is...
Go ahead.
Since we're already totally off the rails, I just want to keep it off the rails. It still blows my mind that the team is called the San Jose Earthquakes. Like, that they named their team after, like, a local disaster, and that the Chicago Fire are called the Chicago Fire. Like, it's just, it's really weird to me. Like, if the Crew moved to Austin and they named the team the Floods or something like that, like, aren't people going to be upset by that? Why is no one...
It'll be the Austin Ambition.
Well, why are they not bugged by that? Like, that would bug me if I cheered for a team.
Does the Miami Hurricanes bug you?
That kind of bugs me. Yeah, it's like, well, my house got destroyed by a hurricane 5 years ago. Why am I cheering for the Hurricanes? You know, if they call the team the Ohio Tornadoes, I'd be like, please stop. Don't do that.
Tornadoes.
It's weird. It's just weird.
All right.
I have no takes on this game. I don't think that this is anything anyone needs to be worried about this early on in the season.
Oh, I remember sleeping on them.
People in May were saying, oh, this team's going to be garbage last year, and everything turned out to be fine. We always start slow. It's just the way things are. They tricked us with a couple good performances early on. They're going to start slow again. The way this team works, the system that they play, takes forever to integrate new players. It just does. If Greg Berhalter was a coach in Europe, he would be amazing because he would have basically the same team every season. There's so much turnover in this league. It takes a long time to get these guys back up to pace. It takes a long time for new players to kind of get the feel for where the other guys are going to be in the system. They will be fine by June or July, but until then, it's going to be a rocky road, and fans just need to buckle up and be patient. We've seen this show so many times before, and it always turns out all right. So I'm not worried at all. No, they could lose 6-0 to the Earthquakes, and I still wouldn't be concerned.
Sunshine Brigade, there it is.
They're not going to lose 6-0. I'm not saying that. We'll watch them now lose 6-0, and people be like, "Oh, he said it on the podcast." No, they're not going to lose 6-0.
That would require people to be listening to this podcast,
which they've already turned it off because it's hit that point in the show where only our most devoted fans are sticking it out to the end. Thank you, fans. Thank you.
Well, according to my two interviews during the postgame, they said we were dropping the ball numerous times and we need to get it together. And earlier in the season, somebody told me they missed Matt Goschert, so the show's been off the rails ever since he's been gone. So
Predictions!
I do miss Matt. Miss you, Matt.
He doesn't listen. He told me so.
Oh, that's not nice. Anyway, guys, prediction time, as you've heard. San Jose Earthquakes coming into town. The natural disaster team of Major League Soccer coming into Mafre Stadium, the tiny demon fortress. Let's circle back around the panel here and hit it up to our – actually, let's hit our sponsors up real quick because I don't think I've done that this show.
You haven't. I was going to yell at you afterwards.
Let's pay the bills. Guys, you're listening to the Massive Report podcast brought to you by – Old North Arcade in Clintonville. Does anybody have the address? Somebody save me, please.
No.
Okay. Old North Arcade, you know where it's at. It's great. Oh, by the way, at one of our former sponsors, I actually partook in the Dope Porch on Wednesday. So it was great. I had a wonderful time. The Dope Porch was great. And from what I heard, they're going to expand on said Dope Porch. So.
Yeah, we talked about this like 3 weeks ago.
I wasn't here. So, hi. Anyway, let's go to the predictions here. Hello, Patrick Murphy. Give me your groceries.
4-1. I think they do what I said they're going to do. And if they don't next week, I will predict a loss.
Fair enough. Alex Danek.
Every time I predicted a win, it has not been a win. And every time I predicted a draw, it's been a win. So I'm going to predict 2-2.
That's ambitious. I respect that. You have ascended to the top of my ambition rankings. Good job. I, on the other hand, am going to pick... David Bingham's gone for the Earthquakes. Their back looks a little weird. We're going to go 3-1. I'm feeling 3-1. Columbus Cruisers, SC victory. Yeehaw. Hashtag respect your roots. Go see that mural. Gentlemen, anybody want to pimp anything? Anyone want to plug anything? Go ahead.
Yeah. Brian Mazenoff is back in Columbus as Ohio State's men's soccer head
coach. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Here we go.
For those of you who don't remember back to 2004, Brian Mazenoff, and well before that, Brian Mazenoff was a great midfielder for this team, As Alex said before we started recording, he was really good when he wasn't hurt, which happened far too often for him. But still, I believe his sixth all-time in appearances for the club. You know, was a solid player, was on the 98 World Cup team, played in all three games. Very, very good. Captained this team a variety of times, the crew, I mean. And since he's retired, went on to coach at Louisville and then to his alma mater at Indiana with another former crew player in Todd Yeagley. Brian was the assistant there. Great guy. I remember lots of interactions with him as a fan. He was a guy that they brought out a lot. I went to his Indiana camp. He was great there. You know, so I think this is a addition for Ohio State that will be good. He's got a lot of experience, championships as a player and a coach. I think he can help make this program into an even better program than it was under John Bloom. So that's my pimping for the day.
Hashtag Autograph Alley. Alex, anything you'd like to talk about?
Hello. Not really. No, I'm good. I'm good.
Hey, did you see...
Go Blue Jackets. Go Cavs.
Did you see Football Manager came out on the Nintendo Switch?
Yeah, for $40, and I already own it on the iPhone and on the iPad. So do I need a third device with that? No, I do not. So I appreciate that whatever, Football Interactive or whatever they're called, have released it on the Nintendo Switch, but... I've got different games that I'm playing on that thing. So you're not getting me this time, Football Manager. Screw you.
Can I tell you I bought it and it is a really interesting experience.
Because you don't have a mouse.
You're
playing the iPad version on a small iPad. That's all you're doing.
But with better graphics.
It's the same graphics.
I think they're better. I'll go play.
No one wants to hear you guys talk about this.
I'll go play Skyrim. There's like a 1% devotion here, and then we'll sink into pro wrestling. Anyway, quick pimp there. Congratulations to Columbus Eagles undefeated in their preseason.
You're not allowed to talk about that on this podcast. We discussed this earlier because you're not allowed to.
Soccer in Columbus.
We told you this before the podcast.
No,
it's just today you're not allowed to talk about it because you were making tea and not getting the podcast started on time.
Oh.
So you didn't get to talk about them.
Congratulations.
Talk about them next week.
Congratulations. I'll say it one word at a time.
End it.
All right, guys. For Patrick Murphy, Alex Stanek, the departed Bart Logan, and whoever Sam Fahmy is in this world, my name is Ralph Schudell. Thank you so much for listening to the Massive Report podcast. Everything will restore into normal order next week. Goodbye.
Hey, buddies. It's the Massive Report podcast brought to you. Oh, just, well, it's live, but now you're counting down. What are we doing?
This okay, is gonna be hold a on. Really stop. Good, stop.
This
stop.
Is going to be a really good cold open.
Stop. We will probably put this in at the end. 3,